Good morning. I will now, or good afternoon, I'm sorry. I will now call this meeting of the Senate Transportation Committee to order. Let the record reflect that it is 1:35 p.m. on Thursday, April 27th, 2023. Let the record also reflect that we have a quorum to conduct business. We have Vice Chair Wilson, Senator Luke Tobin, and myself, Chair James Cobb. No other legislators in the office, but our LIO moderator, Lisa Denny, is here, and Johanna Crossett from Records, and my Transportation Committee aide, Emma Torkelson. Before we commence, please silence your cell phone and consider placing it in a charging port where it will be safely harbored for the duration of the committee hearing. Today, we will be hearing from a collection of small and rural ports. We will hear from the Aleutians East Borough, the City of Cordova, the City and Borough of Yakutat, the City of St. Paul, and Port McKenzie in the Matsu. They will each give us a 10-minute presentation and give space for questions during and after each presentation. During today's meeting, I will be called away to present in the House Finance Committee. At that point, I will hand the gavel over to Senator Tobin to continue the meeting until I return. With that, we have representatives here from each port. I want to thank you all for being here, and also thank the Alaska Municipal League for leading the coordination of today's set of presentations. So we will now begin our first presentation, the Aleutians East Borough. And this presentation will be 10 minutes of the actual presentation, and then a time allocation of 7 minutes for questioning. So without further ado, I'd like to call on Mayor Alvin Osterbeck of back of the Aleutians East Borough to give us an overview of their borough harbors. So please state your name and location for the record. We may have a technical difficulty. No, it says he's here.
Can you hear me okay?
I can.
Okay. The borough is made up of six communities that include Sandpoint, King Cove, Cold Bay, Balls Pass, Akutan, and Nelson Lagoon. The Aleutians East Borough encompasses 15,000 square miles. The borough's tax structure consists of a 2% raw fish tax. As we are made up of fishing families primarily, safe harbors are the backbone of our communities and very important to the well-being of all other businesses that exist in our community. With that, I have 11 slides that will help to understand the harbors of each community. So I believe Emma is working the slides.
Yes, sir.
So slide two, Sandpoint. We have the Robert E. Galvin Small Boat Harbor, owned by the City of Sandpoint, berthing space for 170 vessels up to 150 feet. Fully rehabilitated in 2014, new floats, gangways, electricity, potable water systems, and fire suppression systems. On the lower portion, the borough owns the new harbor. It's served by Float B currently, which is on the lower right. It's adequate to handle large and small vessels. The next phase of this harbor is to complete Float A. That float will follow the breakwater wall on the upper portion of the lower slide there. It'll follow the breakwater all the way around up past the docks there. That'll be where that goes. So the borough received $4.125 million in harbor facility grant and $5.3 million in a PIT grant. So the state granted a six-month extension on this till June 30th to execute the grant agreement. Next slide. This is King Cove's harbors. Their North Harbor provides moorage for up to 75 fishing boats, 26,000 square foot timber float system designed to withstand 130 mile an hour winds, ice free year round, owned and operated by the City of King Cove. Now the newer harbor, Lower Harbor, the Robert Babe Newman Harbor, it has moorage for 60 to 150 foot fishing vessels and accommodates about 50 boats. This is also owned by the city. The next slide is Balls Pass. Completed, the boat harbor is owned by the borough. Harbors are transferred to cities when the bonds, when there's no more debt service on the harbor, we transfer. The city maintains and operates it currently. It has two floats, accommodates 40 plus boats from 32 feet feet to 120 feet, and the borough funded the construction of the two floats. Next slide, Acatan. Acatan Harbor is near completion. It will be able to accommodate 58 vessels up to 165 feet, served by a float, needs funding to design and build a second float. Once complete, this will accommodate 58 vessels up to 165 feet in length and two vessels in 125 foot length. The project currently depends on state's harbor grants, and it is programmed to finalize. Currently, we feel at today's dollar value, it's going to take $15 million to complete this project. Nelson Lagoon Dock, the next slide. The borough owns the dock. It's 35 feet by 150 feet. In 2021, we put $1.6 million in repairs. That was installed, piles, anodes, overhaul existing steel fender system, and completion of the dock's topside. The dock also contains a 2-ton crane mounted on the north end and forklifts and load and a loader. It has a boat ramp, 21 by 157 feet, used for small boats and skiffs, and a travel lift that accommodates boats up to 50 feet in length and 14 feet in width, up to 40 tons. One set of finger piers on each side of the dock can operate in most weathers and currents. Next slide. Cold Bay Dock. The Cold Bay Dock is 45 years old, serves as a major marine hub in the Aleutians for conventional and containerized general cargo, petroleum products, landings for passengers via a fishing boat and the Tustamina Ferry. It's a public dock, 60 foot wide, 360 foot long. The borough owns the dock. We have a dock management agreement with the city of Cold Bay to maintain and operate it. It's projected to have a 10-year lifespan left. The borough has conducted a feasibility study, determined major structural elements in poor condition, shows ongoing deterioration. Eventually, function and capacity will be reduced and no longer be serviceable. The borough currently is working with AML and state on a PIT grant application for design, permitting, and construction of a new dock. This is a critical need for the community and the region. Also, Cold Bay, I believe, is the third longest runway in the state, and it's used at times. International flights have troubles, and they touch down in there. So it's a very important part of the state of Alaska's airways, I believe. Okay, slide 8. Our challenges. Communities are remote, accessible only by plane or boat, harsh and unpredictable weather, gale force winds, dense fog. Travel out to our communities are very expensive. Cancellation causes added costs for contractors and people that are just traveling. Other hurdles, inflation, rising interest rates, supply chain issues. Despite challenges, we're proud of our accomplishments, and we will overcome obstacles in providing necessary infrastructure. Next slide, the importance of infrastructure. Commercial fisheries are the lifeblood of our communities. We cannot grow and attract business without operational boat harbors and docks. This infrastructure is needed to create healthy communities. Communities of the Aleutians East Borough rely heavily on state for expertise and to provide matching grant funds for all our projects. We appreciate the state's help, hope to continue improving infrastructure, and this is important for local economies as well as that of the state. Next slide. Importance of state and federal funding. The borough has applied on many occasions for State of Alaska Harbor Facility grant funds. Last year, the borough was pleased to receive $4.125 million in State Harbor Municipal grant funding for Sandpoint's new harbor. Those monies were used as matching funds for the $5.3 million in Port Infrastructure Development Program financing the borough received for this project. The State of Alaska Harbor Facility grants have been an integral funding source for borough harbor projects. Those funds will continue to be essential for future projects. Federal funds are also crucial numerous grant opportunities are currently available. With that, we're on slide 11, and that's my presentation. So any comments or questions?
Yes, thank you for that. That was an interesting presentation and well presented. I believe we do have a question from Senator Tobin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, I just have a comment on your slide number 7, the Cold Bay Dock. I just want to give folks a reference. 360 feet is longer than a football field. I think that's a very interesting and important note.
It is. Thank you. So I guess I have a question. The projects that you mentioned, can you describe a little bit about your project management structure of how you manage these projects using contractors and how you provide oversight, from the borough as the projects are being done?
Okay. So the borough is set up with mayor strong government, and the administrator works closely with the mayor and the rest of her staff, and we set up basically, like, if we're going to look at, like, right now we're getting ready to finish the boat harbor here in Sandpoint. So we have an engineering firm that helps us go through and make sure everything is right and ready to go to bid. So we'll get the bid packet out, and then we'll have on-site engineering services provided on our behalf when the contracts are left and the folks come in to develop and finish our harbor project. Is that kind of what you're looking for, Mr. Chair?
Yes, sir. That's a bit of it. So you're hiring people to provide your oversight function that are not necessarily the same people that are actually doing the work. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. We do basically any of the projects that we do, we feel that it's worth the dollar value to hire engineer to protect our interests and oversee and make sure projects are done according to our schedule and what's supposed to be in them, whether it's a harbor or a building or rebuilding schools or whatever we have. We do hire project managers.
Okay, well, sounds great. We have any further questions from the committee members? So, well, looks like there's no further questions. I want to thank you for an interesting presentation. And do you have any final or further comments before we move to the next one?
Mr. Chair, I'm just happy to be here, and I hope our presentation helped you some. And I have been attending the Harbor Masters annual meeting each year. Actually, I spent 9 years at running the Port of Dutch Harbor as their director. I started attending ports and harbor meetings back then, and when I left there and moved back home, I continued them as an assembly member for the borough. And when I became mayor about 6 years ago, I just kept it up, and because we own some of the harbors. So I'm very interested in making sure that the state understands the importance of harbors, and I will continue to work with the Harbor Masters Association, even though I'm no longer a harbor master or port director, and hopefully continue working forward with folks like you and your committee and the rest of the legislature. So anyway, thank you for your time.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much. All right. So with that, we will move to the next presentation, the City of Cordova, as presented by Helen Howarth, the city manager. So, Ms. Howarth, please put yourself on the record.
Thank you.
And I'm sorry, a bit of business. I almost forgot to mention that Senator Myers has arrived on the scene. I think that was about 1:47 p.m. Thank you. Please go ahead.
Thank you. My name is Helen Howarth. I'm the city manager in Cordova. And just as a little bit of background, again, moving to the slides, we can go to slide 1.
Yes, ma'am, we're on it.
Okay, great. The harbor was built by the state of Alaska, for which we are grateful. It is the lifeblood of our community, but it was built with a 25-year lifespan, opening in 1983. So we're, at this point in time, at least for a portion of our harbor, 15 years past usable life, and like an old used car, when you inherit it, you know that eventually the engine's going to fail and the body's going to get rusted. And that's where we are with our South Harbor. Fortunately, we are in the midst of some significant improvements and a significant focus on making sure our harbor is up to date and available to serve our community. The next slide, general information. Our harbor is one of the largest single basin harbors in the state. It's a transportation hub, it's safe harbor, it's all of those things that harbors are, and it is the core of our fishing industry and our fishing fleet. There's 711 slips. Vessels are between 18 feet and about 80 feet. The shipyard we have can lift vessels and service vessels. We have small vessel storage lots, an ocean dock, which is used by the Coast Guard for their buoy tenders. We have a city dock, which is also used for large vessels. And we have a number of lift hoists and launch ramps that will allow us to, again, service the industry. A 2016 condition assessment was conducted and basically said our harbor was in port of serious condition. It doesn't have ADA access. 37 of our mooring stalls are missing or too damaged to use, often because of storms which frequent these North Gulf Coast areas. Mother Nature does have her way of wreaking havoc on any sort of maritime environment, and ours is not without its fair share of damage. Our harbor is a working harbor. It's not a tourist harbor. It's not a cruise ship harbor. It is a working harbor. It hosts one of the largest commercial fishing fleets in Alaska. It's a cargo hub. We get all of our bulk fuel through the harbor. Tourism and recreation are emerging industries, but a very, very small portion of the uses that our harbor sees. Forest Service uses our harbor. Again, the Coast Guard uses our harbor. State agencies use our harbor. And it is the core of the Copper River and Prince William Sound fishing fleet. We have five seafood processors here in Cordova, all of which are fed by the fleet that uses our harbor on a regular basis. In terms of challenges and opportunities, another slide, constant maintenance. That's a given for any maritime infrastructure. It's expensive. There's the unknown of storm surges and unusual things that happen in maritime industries. We're off the road system, so everything that we do has to be shipped in, barged in, and it's expensive. But we maintain the harbor as best as we can, and I think that's where we are right now. Opportunities. We are starting to see more ecotourism here. Again, it's a very small portion of the harbor use, but this area of the world is very beautiful, has a lot of natural interest to tourists. We do not have much in the way of recreational vessels here yet. We're close enough to the Gulf of Alaska that it's, you know, weather-wise, it's tricky navigation. And it's, you know, some 70 miles away from the nearest road system community, which is either Whittier or Valdez. So it's a fair piece for anyone to travel in their boats. We are starting to see more and more year-round fisheries and mariculture opportunities developing here. And again, that will just support the industry that exists already and reinforces the need for a strong working harbor. So the good news is that we are doing a South Harbor rebuild project. We're starting this fall. All the vessels will be out of the South Harbor on September 14th, and we will be working all winter long on a major, close to $40 million renovation project. We've let a design build contract with Turnagain Marine. We have a third party, manager who has huge experience with port and harbor development, who is representing city to help guide the project along and make sure it's a success. The unfortunate thing about this South Harbor project is 2 years ago when we first had it engineered and costed out, it was a $32 million project. we were successful in accumulating and gathering all of those resources. We had $32 million in hand. We went out to bid, and the lowest bid that came back was $46 million, a huge difference. And the result of that cost increase, pandemic-related inflation, is that we've had to reduce the scope of work, and we're navigating with all of our funders to make sure that we don't reach that tipping point where what we're able to do and what we said we were able to do would in any way jeopardize our funding. We're close to getting a final approval from all of our funders, but what is the problem now is we cannot go lower than the $39 million, and we're $4 million short on the project. We're actively looking for resources to do that. And if worse comes to worse, we'll dip into our reserves, but that will leave us with no matching funds for any other critical infrastructure project in our community. So we applied to Denali Commission, and we're seeking other opportunities. So that project is very exciting and will be moving our community far forward with new infrastructure that will support our fishing fleet and the industry that sustains our town. Another project, one other thing I want to make you aware of is that we did get quite a bit of resources, as I said, to fund this project, one of which was a $5 million state tier one grant. And one of the things that was sort of a surprise for all of us is that $5 million is not $5 million. The state takes an admin overhead fee, which is close to about $360,000. So our $5 million tier one grant is actually worth about $4.5 million. And those are the kinds of things that can really hurt because you build your budget around a $5 million award, and $360,000 can provide some critical funding for essential pieces of our harbor rebuild project. So those are the kinds of things that I think I want to make sure that you guys are aware of how the state's resources are being deployed and how those overhead dollars that are being taken by the various agencies are actually impacting our ability to get the work done. We have a huge local commitment. We've committed over $10 million in resources already. We've bonded ourselves. We've committed resources that were for other types of projects. So there's no lack of local commitment. It's just with a town of, 2,600 people, there's only so much we can do and so much dollars we have. The other piece that we're working on actively, again, looking at a full infrastructure improvement to the entirety of the harbor. We're now looking at the North Harbor. We're applying for a PID grant, the federal Ports and Infrastructure Development Funding Program. We're applying due, I think, tomorrow or Friday. We'll have a grant application in for North Harbor Rebuild, which will support the industry with transportation and road improvements, pedestrian improvements, uplands improvements, and other things that will allow us to get our fleet to get their product from the harbor itself to a transportation hub that will get it to the airport and other shipping opportunities. So that's another big project, and we are actively pursuing funding for that as well. I think at this point, that's sort of my presentation. We're deep in it, and we are committed at every level, and certainly thank the state for its support so far, and know that we will continue to be looking for resources to help maintain this essential infrastructure. And with that, I will turn it over to you for questions.
Well, thank you very much. Appreciate that. This has been interesting to see what small communities are doing. It's a lot of big work from a small group of people. So do we have any questions on the committee? Any comments? It looks like you were complete enough where you left no room for questions.
Thank you.
Want to thank you on a very good presentation. I want to say the photographs in your presentation are beautiful too. So it looks great. So thank you for presenting today. We appreciate it. So we'll move now next to the City and Borough of Yakutat, as presented by John Erickson, Borough Mayor. Mr. Erickson, please place yourself on the record. Begin your presentation.
Yes, excuse me. My name is John Erickson. I'm the City and Borough Manager of Yakutat, Alaska. Thank you, Senator Kaufman and the committee for listening to me, and I appreciate this opportunity to talk about Yakutat ports. I am now just completing my ninth year, so I've been working and trying to upgrade the ports in Yakutat with various projects for the last 9 years.
Excuse me. I'm sorry for the false start, but I just found that I have to go to a different committee meeting. I'm going to gavel out temporarily and hand the gavel over to Senator Tobin, who will continue the rest of the meeting.
Welcome back to Senate Transportation. Senator Kaufman stepped away on other state business, so this is Vice Chair Wilson. And we are on Yakutat. Mr. Erickson?
Yes, my name is John Erickson again, and thank you, Senator Wilson and Senator Tobin, for my allowing me to present. I have been the city manager in Yakutat for 9 years, I've been in the 9 years, I've tried to work on our boat harbors and a number of things everywhere. So if we go to the first slide, you'll see, first slide? Oh yeah, okay. We have three facilities in Yakutat. We have a small boat harbor, which was originally built in 1960 and finally handed off to the state. The state gave it to Yakutat, and I believe 2002. We have a multi-purpose dock, we got a grant, and we built that in 2015, and that's a sheet pile grant, sheet pile dock that we take our fuel and our cargo. And then we also have the Ocean Cape dock, and that was, it's been running since early 1900s. And that's where we, the city owns that dock, but we rent it out to Yakutat Seafoods, and that's our fish processing plant. Yakutat primarily does fresh fish, so because we have airlines every day, one going north, one going south, Alaska Airlines are able to ship out the freight. Anyway, moving on to the next slide. The small boat harbor, what we use that primarily now for is we use it, Allen Moraine, and we're quite adjacent to the Hubbard Glacier. Hubbard Glacier is kind of a wonder of the world, and it's a marine glacier that's about 40 miles from town. And Allen Marine takes and meets cruise ships out in what they call Disenchantment Bay, unloads the people, and takes them on private tours. So we have, although we never get to see the cruise ships, we probably have 100 cruise ships coming to Yakutat a year, and they are out there, and Allen Marine is servicing them. So it's nice we're getting some kind of revenue. And that's where they leave from our, that's where we have them stationed, the Allen Marine boat, and then, of course, all of the fishing vessels that are supplying Yakutat seafood, that's where they're more. The multipurpose dock is where our barges and our fuel comes in, and then the Ocean Cape dock is where the fish plant is. The problem with the Ocean Cape dock is it's also our place that we accept the ferries. So that limits us to the ferry Kennecott. And of course, the Kennecott is not running this year. So for the first time in some time, we don't have a ferry all summer. Next slide, please.
And before you continue, Mr. Erickson, just for the record, just want to say that Senator Keel docked into Santa Transportation Harbor at 2.05 p.m.
I'm sorry, I missed that. What was that again?
Please continue.
Okay. Yeah, there's three docks, and so, as I said, the fish plant dock is also our where they land the ferries. So maybe I wasn't clear on that. Thank you. What we handle is we handle lots and lots of fresh halibut that was shipped out by Alaska Airlines. Seafood, heating oil, timber, and Mental Health Trust is planning to open up a mine in Alaska probably within the next few years. So they've been doing that and researching that. It is a garnet gold mine in a part of Yakutat, which is called Icy Bay. What is limiting Yakutat right now and our port's challenges are, next slide, is our economic growth is being limited because of we don't have any extra slips. Right now, there's an 18-year waiting list for a slip. And for example, if a cruise ship wanted to come into town and even use their small boats, there would be no place for them to land. And of course, the bigger barges and so on, they have a difficult time, and we have no way to unload any type of ocean-going ships. Now, concerning funding, we got the state Tier 1 grant, and we were awarded $7.3 million. And we decided we would go for that. And, of course, then we got that approximately a year ago, and that grant will run out, and we will lose that grant theoretically July 1st. We thought we were going to be able to get that funded, but we tried Tiger seven different times, ADA, MIRAD, and we just applied for the PIP, and of course Denali, but we haven't been successful in the last 12 months getting funding. It is $3.65 million that would be our share of the 7.3. And we finally, we hired PMD out of our own money and spent around $200,000 on PMD to just get us exact figures and costs. And we were shocked to think that our original amount from 7.3 is now 12.6. So I had a geo bond all set to go to make up the difference, and the geo bond with the 3.6, we were $6 million short. So we're back to the drawing board, and as I said, looking for funding and trying to figure it out, and hoping that the Department of Transportation doesn't take away our 6.5 million portion of the Tier 1 grant. Small boat harbor safety concerns. It is, because it was built so long ago, it is not ADA compliant. We had R&M. I hired them to do an appraisal of the dock, and they said that it had about 10 years before it was going to have to be replaced. And that was 5 years ago when I had R&M do the update of the project. I'm hopeful. That's why we've been trying to, and I've waited 9 years to, or 8 years to go after the Tier 1, as I could see that it would be a lot of money between a, because it's a 50-50 match grant. And of course, we don't have any, our fire system, suppression system on the dock is substandard and not working in some spots. We also, I upgraded the electricity on the dock and brought in an electrical cable, and because of the weight of the electrical cable on that old 1960 framing, it now leans about 15 degrees to the right. And so it's getting dangerous. And according to the R&M report, we got about 5 years left before we're going to be in big trouble. Next slide, please. So you know what's going on. The multi-purpose dock, because there is no ferry system, but luckily the Department of Transportation state, they were able to secure funding for a new ferry dock, one that is independent of the fish plant. And they said that they will be out in the next 3 or 4 months looking at sites and so on. One of the sites could be at the multi-purpose dock, where we could have a ferry dock that doesn't require the Kennecott elevator that can take any kind of ferry, and that will be a huge blessing for us. But as I said, we don't have a ferry this summer. The small boat, we, as I said, we have $3.65 million committed by the state, but and we've gone after DOT, raised PND 7 times. We went after let's see, that been I forget the name of it, but federal DOT, and so right now what we're looking at is trying to come up with some way to make progress. It's been a real worrisome time right now. I guess our big question is, we're concerned about losing the 50-50 MASH grant because you have 9 months to get started, and because of the shock of being doing a geo bond and coming up with $4 million and doing the grant of 3.65 million, that gets me only the 7.65, and 12.6 is I had to call off the geo bond and figure out where we could go. $4 million geo bond with the smallest we are, we're only about 600 people, is pretty steep. So anyway, that's our situation right now. I'm more than happy to answer any questions, and I appreciate your time. God bless Yakutat.
Yes, God bless Alaska, the U.S., and Yakutat. Senator Tobin has a question for you, Mr. Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Erickson, I just want to make sure that I understand the plight of the small boat harbor correctly. And please clarify me as I attempt to summarize what you've just shared. So the state has already provided $3.6 million to replace the small boat harbor. However, due to rising projection or rising cost projection, there's additional resources needed, and that needs to go to bond. And you're fearful that the $3.6 million will not be there when you have finally secured the remainder of the funding. Is this correct, or am I missing something in that summary?
You're exactly correct. That is true. It's actually $3.65 million because the original cost for what I thought the Prairie Dock would be $7.3 million. But now, after having PND and spending $200,000 to get actual appraisals and get to the 35% complete, I'm $8.9 million short.
All up, Senator Tubman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I understand that concern, and I know there's some folks here who may sit on the Finance Committee who are listening. And so we'll definitely follow up here to help in any way that we can. Thank you.
I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
And Mr. Erickson, in the small boat harbor, there used to be this rock right outside the harbor that's right at tide line in Yakutat. Has that ever been addressed? I know it's been the cause of many outboard motors and being sort of yanked off.
The small boat harbor, yes, if there is an island that is directly out approximately, probably 800-900 yards in front of the small boat harbor, and if you go to the right, you're fine. If you go to the left, you're fine except on low tide. So I learned by having people take me out that go right around the island and don't go left.
All right. I just didn't know if there is a way to sort of take care of that obstacle. So we have a question from Senator Myers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, this question for you, Mr. Chair. I was just wondering if you were speaking from personal experience there.
No. I was there doing an education practicum and teaching the youth and had an opportunity to go out on the boat. And we passed by that little sort of a story time of situations. With that, we want to thank you, and we will get ready for our next presenter, Philip from St. Paul, City Manager.
Yes, good afternoon, Mr. Chair and committee members. For the record, my name's Phil Zavadil. I'm the City Manager for the City of St. Paul. I think we're still the largest Unungan or Aleut community here in the state. Our harbor was built to transition us from a first commercial fur seal economy to a fishing-based economy. Historically, nearly 50% of Bering Sea snow crab has been delivered and processed here in St. Paul. And, of course, with no crab fishery this year and potentially in the coming years, we're in a great time of transition. So you can go to the next slide. Our breakwater, which established our harbor, was first constructed in 1983. The following year, it failed during a big storm. And then we worked on a new breakwater that was completed in 1987. Interesting enough, most of that work was done by between the city and the Army Corps. But one of the coastal engineers that worked for state DOT at the time, Harvey Smith, was brought in to figure out how to make our breakwater withstand the storms out here in the middle of the Bering Sea. In 1989, the 1,800-foot long main breakwater was completed, and the 970-foot long detached breakwater was completed along with the dredging. This made available approximately 8 to 10 acres of harbor space. Our harbor depths are pretty shallow. They're 18 to 25 feet. Our entrance channel is about 300 feet wide. And then we have a small boat harbor, which is part of the inner harbor, and that was completed in 2009. Next slide. As far as our facilities, we have a number of dock facilities. Our city south dock is approximately 200 feet long, and that's where most of our heavy lifts cranes can go on that dock. A lot of the barges, fuel barge, other construction barges go to that dock. We have a north dock that's approximately 100 feet long. Two city piers, these were put in. If any of you remember the old, it was old Rusty Bucket barge owned by Unice, that was there to take advantage to kind of the heyday of crab when we had three processors within the harbor. We have the PDX Trident dock, which is approximately 294 feet long. West Landing, that was where Icicle Seafood's Arctic Star barge was there when during the heyday of crab. Unfortunately, that landing was completely destroyed during Typhoon Marbach. That's owned by the Native Corporation. We have a tribal dock in the small boat harbor. It's 60 feet long, and then a number of floating docks that are within the small boat harbor that are put in during the summertime for the halibut fishery. And then our harbor office, and that's specifically focused in there because there's a number of issues with that. Next slide, please. The use of our harbor, typical to other communities, lots of fishing vessels, our fuel barges come in, all our essential goods come in, especially large items come in via barge and freighter, mostly out of Seattle. Believe it or not, we do get cruise ships in. However, due to the depths, they're not able to come into the harbor, so they have to transit via small boat, usually landing within the small boat harbor. Our harbor obviously is a port of refuge. We're out here in the middle of the Bering Sea, and if something happens, we're kind of it for if you're out in the middle of the Bering Sea. Here for medical incidents, research vessels, the Cutter Spar can get in here, the Trooper vessel, I think Fish and Wildlife has the Tekla research vessel that also visits our harbor. And those brave enough in recreational craft sometimes may make their way out here as well. Next slide. Some of our challenges include no crab season, so that puts a damper on our economy. The wave climate within and outside the harbor due to climate change, just changing conditions within the Bering Sea. Finding the funding to make improvements, maintain the harbor, the match requirements on some of the funding are particularly difficult now with no crab season. Our harbor master in particular, it's right at the base of the breakwater. And it constantly suffers damage from storms, increased storms due to climate change. The depths in our harbor don't allow for those larger ships to come in, cruise ships and some of the bigger trawl vessels that are operating in the Bering Sea. Next slide. Some of our opportunities include, out of crisis, there's opportunity. Include increased tourism, cruise ships. We've been in contact with a number of cruise companies, and St. Paul's definitely a destination they want to go to. Support for Arctic research, just research vessels in general. National security interests. We're out here in the middle of the Bering Sea, and Coast Guard, Navy, others operating in the area could use the port to transport goods, services, people. And then we're looking at increased Coast Guard presence, not totally related to our harbor, but it's still related. We have a Loran station that when President Obama decommissioned Loran signal, great Loran station that's owned by the Coast Guard still services as a forward operating base for them for search and rescue. So you have the Coast Guard cutter Healy there in the picture. And very often the Coast Guard helicopters come and land in St. Paul. And some of them stay overnight and use that Coast Guard facility here. Next slide. Ongoing and planned projects. This next year, we have a major maintenance project with the Army Corps. It's about a $13 million project. It includes some replacement of armor rock on the breakwater, the detach, quite a bit of dredging. And then we have a number of different planned projects. Phase one includes a number of different facility improvements, upgrading docks and repairing docks and things like that. Phase two, we're looking at trying to expand the breakwater, revise the entrance channel to allow for larger vessels to come in. And then phase three would be relocating the entrance to our salt lagoon and expanding the uplands in our inner harbor. And all that's explained in a YouTube video that was sent out, as well as a harbor feasibility study that we did with some funding from EDA. R&M consultants performed that for us.
And Philip, we're going to take a brief at ease here. Sorry about that. Well, we're back on the record, and sorry to do that, but I do have a question here before you continue on the previous slide about the Coast Guard presence. I've went to that Coast Guard base when it was in operation. Is it still fully staffed, or is it just partly staffed, or just mothballed? I mean, it was a wonderful facility.
Let's see. In 2020, there was a fire in there, so they've actually renovated the whole building. It's not staffed right now. The plans are, to, I guess, in communication with the Coast Guard, the plans are to renovate, what we call POS camp or the facility at the airport so they can store the helicopter inside there and still use it as a forward operating base for search and rescue. So it would be a seasonal operation of that facilities is the current plan.
All right, thank you. Please continue.
On specifically on phase 1A, we're looking at upgrading our fender system on our south dock. Instead of using tires, which are pretty prevalent through remote rural communities in Alaska, actually having engineered fender systems to provide extra cushion for boats, especially during storm surge. Install a larger spring bollards. We want to install 5 berthing dolphins to the north of the south dock. That south dock is only 200 feet. Our fuel barge and some of our larger barges are like 285 feet, so they kind of hang off of there. And if you have any amount of surge in there, just poses problems for those barges and mooring safely in there. And obviously a new harbor office and relocating that to a small boat harbor away from the breakwater. In the picture there, you'll see in the lower right corner, that was damaged in 2019 from waves that came over the breakwater and basically knocked out the wall of the harbor office, a portion of the wall. So next slide. Wanted to throw in what funding we're focusing on. Mainly it's federal funding. So we've submitted 3 RAISE grants to DOT to for phase one construction, what I just presented, and then planning for upgrading our harbor road, and then removal and replacement of the North Dock, which is pretty much at the end of its life. We've applied for the PDIP grant in 2021-22, unsuccessful, and tomorrow hopefully we're submitting it for round three, hopefully third time is a charm. That's focusing on that phase 1A construction that I talked about. We received the EDA grant, Economic Development Administration grant, for some utility improvements within the small boat harbor that's bringing in sewer mains, water mains, electrical mains into the small boat harbor where there's no utilities there right now. And then we've submitted a FEMA grant for doing a port security plan, which we currently don't have. And that's all that I have. I have further information in that YouTube video, which I think Emma emailed you a link, as well as our harbor feasibility study. Thank you for the opportunity to present today.
Any questions for Mr. Zavdale? Senator Myers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Zavdale, just real quick question. You mentioned climate change and stuff. Are you guys ice-free year-round?
Not all the time. We still get a little bit of ice. It's not to the extent that it was. This year we iced up a little bit. I think the last time that we really iced up where it prevented vessels from coming in was about 2 years ago. So it's definitely lessening, and what's happening, what we're seeing is just more southerly direction storms, which definitely impacts our harbor because the entrance to a harbor is kind of southwest facing. So especially important during crab season, which takes place January kind of through March, April. Normally when we'd have those northerly storms coming in, winter would be here, it'd be cold. We're seeing those southerly direction storms, and actually I have numbers, which I didn't present in my slide, number of times we'd have to close the harbor due to unsafe conditions over the past 5 or 6 years.
Well, Mr. Zavdale, I just have one further question here, sort of the use of the harbor slide. Do you guys get much of sort of the tourists in terms of birders going out or any businesses sort of taking them out?
So St. Paul Tours runs the tour program. Most of them are coming in by plane and then touring the island via bus. We're working on trying to transition and provide more opportunities for them to get out on a vessel to see the birds in the water or on the cliffs from a vessel. And then smaller cruise ships that would come in, mainly they're focused on coming, seeing the fur seals, some of the birds, the bird cliffs near the fur seal rookeries. But they're only on ground for a short period of time, usually like 2 to 4 hours.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And is there any work with your neighbor 40 miles to you in terms of work and collaboration in St. George?
We're trying to work on that. We try to be in touch with some of our plans. We were working on with the entities here on updating our comprehensive economic development strategy. Some of that includes kind of in our island transport with taking advantage of tourism. We did receive a Safer Streets for All grant. That's a joint grant between City of St. Paul and City of St. George. So it's slowly happening, but not as much as I would like. It's just, being our sister island, 43 miles apart, it's still difficult to communicate between the two of us.
All right. Thank you. And with that, Chair Kaufman is back, and we will transition to our next presenter, which is the last presentation, I think is the best presentation yet to come. From the wonderful, mighty Matt Sue, we have Mr. Mike Brown, and I lost the gavel.
Just in time to lose the gavel, Senator Wilson. Thank you, Senator Kaufman, Senators for Senate Transportation. I'm Mike Brown. I'm the borough manager for the Matt Sue Borough. And I'll try to move pretty quickly through this so that we do have some time for questions. So it's kind of interesting just listening to the conversation this afternoon. I think we're going to be a little bit different than some of our friends that are along the other coastal communities. But I'm going to give you a quick little bit of background, and then you have a two-page handout before you. I'll kind of talk you through that here quickly. But what really characterizes Port McKenzie is really access to the Upper Cook Inlet. It was constructed for large-scale industrial use, so I'm not going to be talking about fishing or small boat harbors or any of that type of stuff, because we are just not built for that. It is capable, the port is capable of supporting barges and deep draft vessels. Really, the thing that probably sets us apart from most ports is land. We have uplands about over or approximately 9,000 acres of undeveloped land that's essentially zoned industrial, which creates an amazing opportunity for manufacturing and other things, you know, bulk commodity exports and whatnot, as it relates to having a port with access to water. Limitations-wise, I would probably just, I'll talk about two today. The first one would be we have very limited cargo handling equipment. So a crane, forklift, things like that, that would really help facilitate the movement of goods. The second limitation would be our barge dock is difficult to use. And I'll talk a little bit about what we're doing to address that here in that handout in just a moment. And as far as challenges go, we are subject to tidal and icing conditions of the Upper Cook Inlet, and that can be challenging. Very challenging at times. So that's just some quick background around the port and kind of what the vision was for when it was constructed. As far as going to the handout, if you'll look there at page one, I provided you just an overview because this handout's all forward focused, talking about where we want to go, what we want to do. And there's really three key objectives. The first one is business development, and I'll talk a little bit about this concept of developing a roll-on, roll-off ramp capability. If you were to try to envision that, And I'm going to oversimplify it, basically think of a very large boat launch. So basically a ramp that goes into the inlet itself. This would open up opportunities to dry dock vessels, do maintenance and things that we do not have the capability to do today. So it would open up new business opportunities. We do want to look at business opportunities that align with what's already occurring in the region. So we have recently engaged with a private sector firm to help us make kind of advise us on that and give us a different perspective from what we have as a municipality. As far as the infrastructure improvements, I hit the RoRo ramp quickly. We are looking and exploring different federal funding opportunities to help improve our cargo handling equipment. You've heard some of the other presenters speak to the PIDP program today. That's one avenue that we're actively pursuing. And we're also, like I mentioned, with the private sector partner, we're including them in conversations around business development and also the design and construction of new infrastructure so that we have a private sector partner who's in there advising on what that should look like and how it would support barge operations, for example. And then lastly, incentivize private investment. I'll talk about this one. We are looking for opportunities where we can create conditions that would invite the private sector to make infrastructure investments. So one of those that we've talked about, and this is in the assembly approved state legislative priority, so it's relevant to the legislature, is the idea of a potential state corporate tax holiday for Port McKenzie. So the state's not collecting any revenue in any way on any activity that's taking place at Port McKenzie. So the idea is possibly creating a holiday, a period of time where a firm might be exempt from the state corporate tax holiday or state corporate tax might help to generate conditions that invite that kind of investment. And that would be paired with, tariff breaks on our end as well as local tax incentives. I'm going to go to page two and kind of talk about what's next. I've hit on a couple of these points. We are working to rebuild our relationship with the Port of Alaska. That's been an interesting dynamic in the past. I've been here for just over 2 years as the borough manager, so I'm aware of it. You hear about it. But recently we have had much better discussions with our neighbors to the south about, where there might be opportunities to cooperate. I talked a little bit about this idea of an economic development zone. That's some of that inviting private investment and looking to create incentives that really invite the private sector to come in and talk about what they may be able to contribute. We are, from a funding and project perspective, really kind of twofold. One, we're maintaining the existing infrastructure that we have. A couple of years ago, the borough received an EDA grant. We are in the process of installing pile sleeves to protect the deep draft docks. We're maintaining that existing infrastructure. and also pursuing those opportunities to improve the cargo handling capabilities, as well as that roll-on, roll-off ramp that I discussed earlier. And that takes us down to the Port McKenzie Rail Extension. I would argue that's been a state project. The state's invested about $184 million in that to date. It's been going on for, I guess, a decade or so at this point. And it is basically stalled out. So one of the things that we put in our state legislative priorities this year to kind of try to change that conversation a little bit is this concept of multimodal use. So at this point, millions have been invested in taxpayer dollars and we're not realizing any public benefit to date. So the idea was potentially turning it into a road and creating access. It really does create a nice connection, about an 18-mile connection between the Point McKenzie area and the Parks Highway. So that kind of speaks to and could help to enable better access to interior Alaska. So that's one of the things we've been looking at. There would be some funding needed to convert some of those bridges and make sure it's safe for public travel, but that's a concept we put out there for the first time this year as a legislative priority. So I guess to summarize, I would say with some modest improvements, we do think the Port McKenzie's posture to provide better service to local users, creating new opportunities. We could leverage our proximity to major population centers, I would say, to our north and to our south, and access to interior Alaska. And lastly, the port provides economic opportunities to the Matsu, and I would also submit that it improves resiliency for the region by having that port, even though we are very close in proximity to the Port of Alaska. So I'll wrap up there to leave a little bit of time for some questions if there are any. I appreciate, again, the opportunity to present today.
Thank you, Ms. Brown. We appreciate it. And looks like we have a question from Senator Myers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Mr. Brown, you mentioned challenges with ice and tidal forces and the Upper Cook Inlet and stuff. I was wondering if you could expand on that a little bit and talk about how any of those might differ from being over on the other side at the Port of Alaska, if one side has any advantages over the other as far as ships coming in.
Yeah, I mean, certainly the tidal conditions, I mean, we're both subject to the same tidal conditions. Certainly, I would submit that the icing conditions at Port McKenzie can be more challenging navigationally than perhaps what they experience at the Port of Alaska. You know, when we look at those two ports, and it's kind of been going on for years, I really don't see direct competition there necessarily. Like, there are opportunities in different ways. Obviously, Port McKenzie was built as a bulk commodity, you know, resource development, export capability. What we're saying is it'd be nice to have some capabilities that could do things like import, even on a smaller basis, and not at all to take anything away from Anchorage in terms of the movement for commerce. But there are other opportunities out there for project cargo and other industrial uses that might be better suited for the Point McKenzie area than they are the municipality of Anchorage.
Thank you. Any further questions?
Yes.
Yes, Senator Wilson.
Yes, thank you again, Manager Brown. Just resiliency for the region, what does that mean?
Yeah, I think to some people, we'll use that term, I think some people will take it as redundancy. But, you know, and it's not to say that Port McKenzie is in any way set up to do what the Port of Alaska does. But we do see some opportunities there where, you know, if we were in a position like with a large-scale natural disaster or something like that, it would, I think, be helpful to have additional ports in the region that can support some of that movement of goods and services should it be needed. And again, I think, you know, we're going to see, I think you do see, in having a large population center next to a port sometimes makes some things not super helpful in terms of the type of or the land use impact, if you will. And when you look at Point McKenzie being sparsely populated and zoned industrial, it could create the opportunity for having some things occur there that maybe are better not to be located next to a major population center.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. In our prior presentation from the Port of Alaska in Anchorage, they were speaking about the solar panel project, perhaps. And so that's what you're referring to in your presentation when you said as an opportunity perhaps to provide power?
Yeah, to the chair, and that's really being driven by the Port of Alaska. What we've said is we're happy to cooperate. I think it would require some outside support from Department of Energy or others to talk about, you know, how we might develop something that could support the Muni in that way. We're certainly open to those conversations and partnering, because I think that's what we bring as a port. You know, when we talk about Port McKenzie, we often talk about the port in conjunction with something else. So whether that's connection to rail, connection to road, or potentially just proximity to the geographic location. So I think having that land there does create an opportunity to potentially assist the Muni in that way.
Thank you. One other question, just in its current configuration, are there materials being moved? Is it handling cargo at this time?
Yeah, so to the chair, it is. We do some. It's just not. It's just not very sustainable, I guess. It's more like project based, so it comes and goes. It's not this recurring service. That's what we would like to see, where it's a little bit more recurring in nature and predictable. But certainly, there are goods and services. Co-Alaska's got a permit out there. They bring in a deep draft vessel every now and then with concrete on it. They store that material out there. They use it for projects across the state. And we have some other leases out there as well. I think we're going to be having some salt coming in here soon. So there are things that do occur at Port McKenzie, but not on a recurring, regular basis.
Okay, thank you. So any other questions or comments? So, well, seeing none, we'll thank you for your presentation. We appreciate it. And we'll move on to our final presentation of the day, which is the Alaska Association of Harbor Masters, Port Administrators, and Port of Homer, presented by Brian Hawkins, President of the Alaska Association of Harbor Masters, Port Administrators. Please put yourself on the record.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Brian Hawkins. I'm the Port Director for the City of Homer and Association President for the Alaska Association of Harbor Masters and Port Administrators. Sirs, I didn't have a presentation prepared. I stood by just in case there were follow-up questions, and of course, just enjoyed listening to the presenters. So on that note, just ask if there are any questions that I might be able to help with.
Thank you. Any questions from the committee? We have one from Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Hawkins, can you talk to us just broadly about best practices for Alaska's ports on things like funding depreciation, on sinking funds for maintenance? Is there a general approach, or does every municipality and every port do it differently?
Through the chair to Senator Keel. Yes, there are some standard approaches. The harbors in the state are set up as enterprises, so their finances are separate from the city, the communities that own them. So in Homer, city budget is separate from the harbor's budget. I'm a city employee, of course, and the city is owner-operator of the facility. It was done that way so that fund could be set up. Enterprise fund has a reserves. We pay into the reserves. And that's basically our fund that we use to do maintenance on the existing facilities. Homer just recently, we're in our next budget cycle, we're setting aside a fund we're paying into, which will be matching dollars funds. So we find ourselves in a crunch when we start applying for grants that we don't have the matching funds. So this is an attempt to build a fund to do that with, so that we can be competitive in that. Most of the communities are set up as enterprise funds in that way.
Thank you. Any further questions or comments? So I have one. So Mr. Hawkins, as the ports are receiving money and then they're doing projects, does the association do much about best practices for management of construction processes as far as trying to assure that there's good oversight, owner's oversight, so to speak, of the work being done by competent contractors?
Yes, to the chair. Yes, I think we do. As a as an association, we support the communities by our membership. The you know, there's the 47 member harbors, but there's over 60 supporting businesses that are all of the of the engineering and back all the industry that we need to manage facilities like this. So of course they're in the association because they hope to sell us services and products. And we are learning and through networking, learning from each other best practices. In the past, I'd say 10 years, the way to manage products, projects, major projects like this through design build and of course where we hire oversight, an engineer that would from another firm that oversees the construction as it goes through. So project management is very much a goal here. And I think that, you know, we've matured over the years when it comes to that. And we're seeing really solid projects coming together. I wonder if it would be possible to talk a little bit about the ICAP. The city manager, Howard Cordova, mentioned the fee that's charged to the community who does receive a municipal harbor grant.
Yes, please. We have okay. A little bit of time.
So the municipal harbor grant program, you know, was put together, began at maintenance. You know, the way I explain it here in Homer, we bought Homer Harbor in 1999 and we for a dollar, and for that dollar we bought all the deferred maintenance as well. Harbor Masters Association worked with the DOT and developed the Municipal Harbor Grant Program, and I'm really very proud of the program. I think it really addresses a long-term need. It mentioned before, it's a 50-50 match. So it's got a $5 million cap, and the community has to meet that with $5 million. Now, before you can apply for the grant, you have to have all the engineering in place, and you also have to show that you've got your match dollars. And there's always been an ICAP, and this is a, I don't know what the acronym means, I'm sorry for that, but there's always been a fee, and for the first, 10 or more years, maybe 15 years, the fee was set at about 2%. But here in the past few years, the fee has been as high as 10%. And that's the percentages of the total project cost. It's not just the portion that the state provides. So it gets to be a pretty healthy fee, which of course takes away from our project dollars. And you know, we don't see where there's, we appreciate the support and we appreciate the program greatly. We endorse it every year. You know, we're down every year traveling to the Capitol talking to folks about it, but we don't see that where the additional costs are justified.
Appreciate that. We'll take an action to look into that and understand it a little bit better and share that information with the committee. Do any of the committee members have comment on that? Thank you. I appreciate that last bit of information that you shared, and we will look at it. And thank you for being here today, as with all the presenters.
Thank you very much.
If there's no further comments, questions, we do. Senator Wilson.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I just want to say thank you. I enjoyed our days of harbors, docks, and ports, and I hope everyone has a good birthday from committee.
Oh, boy. All right. So, that concludes our agenda for today, and I want to reiterate my thanks to each of the presenters, and it has been an interesting tour through some of these smaller ports and harbors. We have no further business to consider, and we have very little time left, so we'll go ahead and close. So with no further questions or comments, thank you, committee members, for being here, for your attention today. Thank you to the committee LIO staff, support staff, who helped today's committee meeting run smoothly. And thank you also those that helped me dash out of here, run up those flights of stairs, and arrive breathlessly in a House Finance to present my bill. So that was a challenge. And so anyway, but we made it. So anyway, so our next regularly scheduled meeting will be Tuesday, May 2nd at 1:30 p.m. Any final closing comments? None noted. We are now adjourned at 2:55 p.m. Thank you.